Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Blake Topmeyer is the SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, is available each and every week on Twitter, on X, at BTopmeyer. Well, I would say, Blake, it's been a fun, interesting week. Did you have on your bingo card John Calipari would be the head coach at Arkansas and Mark Pope would be the coach at Kentucky?
I had none of that on my bingo card, and I actually think this is a case where Arkansas appears to have won the carousel. I mean, I know Kentucky fans today, like the morning after, they're trying to convince themselves that maybe there's some hope with Pope. That comes on the heels of last night's expected meltdown. But, I mean, from where I sit, if I could have Calipari for the next 5 years or I could have Mark Pope for the next 5 years, I think I'd probably take Cal. And I think, you know, here in the next few years anyway, I'd probably say Cal and Arkansas have a better chance of getting to the Final Four than Kentucky does, which is crazy to say because you start 200 yards ahead of the pack when you're Kentucky's coach.
Well, I think that's kind of, to me, like, that's what's interesting because I kind of see it going one of two ways. And I think it's either, you know, the way it ends at Kentucky kind of embarrasses Cal and it's lit a fuse under him. Like you said, 5-year run, you could tell me it's a pretty good thing. I lean that way, but I think it's also, you have to accept, like, it could be, you know, yet again, another coach taking one last payday. Like, to me, it's like both are realities, but I think I'd lean to the former.
No, yeah, I think that's totally fair, and I also think with Mark Pope at Kentucky, it's like what I was saying, starting 200 yards ahead of the pack. Like, the floor is just naturally higher of being Kentucky's coach. I mean, you think three out of the last four Kentucky coaches have won a national championship, being Tubby Smith, Rick Pitino, and Calipari, Billy Gillespie being the exception. And so, I mean, when you look at it that way, like, Kentucky basketball, it's almost like the LSU of football jobs, like where Ed O, Les Miles, and Nick Saban all won national championships. So we're now just sitting around for Brian Kelly to win his. So, yeah, I think the floor is much safer with Mark Pope or anybody, really, that Kentucky could have hired than what it is for Calipari in Arkansas. It feels weird saying it because it is Kentucky. They have the ultimate ceiling. But I do think I feel a little bit safer in the ceiling of John Calipari than I do about the ceiling of Mark Pope.
What does it say to you? Well, hang on, let me ask him this, then Mark can chime in. What does it say to you, though, that we now live in a universe where the Baylor coach says no to Kentucky? I mean, I don't think the UConn coach saying no to Kentucky. Like, Dan Hurley is in the midst of maybe a historic run. So, like, him not saying yes to Kentucky, I don't think that that's some sin. But it's like we now live in a world where the Baylor coach goes, you know what? I'm good here. Like, what does that overall say to you?
I think it says, and I think this is a case now more than ever, that coaches who are making really good money at good jobs aren't always eager to leave for even better money for great jobs. Like, everybody assumes, like, it's just like, well, back up the Brinks truck. You know, he won't say no if you back up the Brinks truck. And it's like, yeah, sometimes they do say no because, you know, if you're making $6 million where you're at, and someone else offers you $8 million, it's just like you and I would, right? Like, I mean, we could turn down an offer for more money. Anybody could. Like, and I think coaches are the same way. More money doesn't always talk. I mean, if you're coaching BYU, you're a Kentucky alum, you're absolutely leaving for Kentucky. But, you know, there once was a time where you would have bolted out of Baylor for Kentucky before the contract even hit your desk. But Scott Drew has spent 20-plus years there. He's turned Baylor into a top 20 program. I think he gets really good support at that university. And I know that we always laugh about the idea of like coaches and families, you know, as if that never factors in. But I do think that occasionally does factor in, not to the extent that it probably factors in for normal people, but Scott Drew's got kids. All they've ever known is Waco, Texas. And I think it's really hard sometimes to uproot a guy who's making good money at what he's turned into a good job, and he's been there for 20 years. It's a reminder that it's hard to uproot those people.
Well, I am interested in how this all works out, because I am actually kind of like Kentucky fans, where I wasn't necessarily surprised they hired Mark Pope. I was surprised at the timing. I figured he'd be the type of hire you make like 2 weeks from now after you're really like swung and missed on a couple. You know, you swing and miss, you wait for Donovan, swing and miss on him, and then like.
I mean, I thought it was going to go like the Louisville search.
Yeah.
Where Pat Kelsey may end up working, but like it's obvious that they settled.
Yeah, I thought, but so I was surprised at the timing. But you've already seen, like, he had a pretty good BYU team coming back. If he can bring some of that team to Kentucky, and then to me the key is, if he's able to keep Reed Shepard, he's going to get, he needs to get off to a fast start. Like, when you have, like, this type of reaction, you need to, it's not one of those things where you can, where if you got Billy Donovan, you know, because you waited to get him and whatever, you could maybe stand a down year in the first year of Billy Donovan because he's Billy Donovan. With Mark Pope, if he has a less than great first year, it's going to be hard to recover from, in my mind.
I totally agree, and I kind of look at like Billy Gillespie, sort of the same thing. Like Billy Gillespie is not Billy Donovan; he's not even Rick Pitino. I mean, we forget that Rick Pitino was a really proven coach coming to Kentucky.
He'd been to the Final Four.
And exactly, been to the Final Four with Providence. Like guys like that.
He'd been the coach of the Knicks at that point, hadn't he?
Yes, yeah,
he'd been the coach of the Knicks.
Yeah, and John Calipari, you know, he had runway. He didn't need it. I think he won like 32 games in his first season. I think made the Elite Eight in year one at Kentucky. But he would have had some runway. But someone like a Billy Gillespie had no runway, and he lasted just 2 years there. Mark Pope, he might have a little bit longer runway than Billy Gillespie because of the fact that he was a team captain on a national championship team, but that didn't take you very far once you start losing games. So, I agree with you, Mark. Like, I think year one is super important for him because of everything we're talking about, and also like because of transfers, no one really thinks at things in like a 3-year plan anymore. I'm not sure fans ever really totally thought that way, but I think they've been conditioned now. With the microwave ability of the transfer portal, that you shouldn't have to wait 3 years to see promising results. You should, especially in basketball, where you can bring in a couple impact players who can make a big difference for your team. You expect positive signs in year one, and we've also seen that like Calipari, a down year for him was bowing out early in the NCAA tournament. Like there was that one year that was a complete disaster where he missed March Madness, right? But I mean,
there were so many circumstances. Remember that was like the post COVID year where it was just bizarre.
I think that might have been post COVID.
And then he had 1 year where they missed the tournament where like his entire team like had tore their ACL.
Right. No, I think that was the year they missed the tournament. The post COVID year was when they lost in the first round to St. Peter's, I believe. But anyway, the floor with him was like first weekend exit in the NCAA tournament. It wasn't going, 16 and 15. So, I think Mark Pope has to make the NCAA tournament in year one. And anything beyond that might be a little bit of gravy. He might get a 1 year honeymoon where it's like, just get to the big dance, show some promise and then accelerate in year two. But I do think that has to be the floor. Like, it can't be a disaster out of the chute. It has to be NCAA tournament qualification in year one for Mark Pope.
Well, and I think, like, to your point, even more so, like, I was thinking about this. In terms of the hires now, like, if we are all accepting the most significant thing about any job is what your NIL war chest is, like, if you're going to go and make the hire where it's, it's the fallback option. Like, to me, it's like, okay, maybe you get everybody motivated early because it's a Kentucky guy. We're bringing him home and we're doing all this. But man, when you start like zigging when everybody else is zagging, like it has to work. Otherwise, then people just check out immediately.
Yeah, and I'll add one more thought to this. I think it adds a really extra element of pressure when your predecessor is still in the conference coaching.
Absolutely.
You know, I had a column this week ranking the best basketball jobs in the SEC, and I think there's a sizable gap between 1 and 2, and I think there's a sizable gap between 4 and 5. But I had Arkansas number 2, the second best basketball job in the SEC. Now you could convince me that it's actually 3 or 4. You can't convince me that Arkansas is any worse than the 4th best job in the SEC, and I think it's the 2nd best job in the SEC. So you got your predecessor is at a very good program, not a blue blood like Kentucky, but a very good program in the conference. And then you have Bruce Pearl, whom a lot of Kentucky fans, by the end, after they'd been turned down by Scott Drew, and they'd finally realized, yeah, we're probably not getting Billy Donovan, Kentucky fans were starting to warm up to the idea of, let's make a run at Bruce Pearl. So you got him still sitting there in the conference at Auburn. I think those two guys really add extra pressure. You know, I mean, for Tennessee for years, John Gruden was the white whale they could never land, right? But he wasn't sitting there coaching somewhere else right. in the conference. And so I think Calipari being at Arkansas and Bruce Pearl, the guy they didn't approach, being at Auburn, that adds some extra heat for Mark Pope to really start hot in year one, I think.
Why do you think they didn't seriously consider Pearl? Like, do you really think it's still like the NCAA stuff, or do you think like at a certain point, like, hey man, like we're gonna get a Wildcat?
I think, and I don't really know Mitch Barnhart, you know, other than to speak to him at group settings. He's not one of the ADs that I have a strong relationship with in this conference. I just know him more from a distance. But what I know about him, I think he's one of the more straight shooter, play it safe, a little more conservative ADs in this conference. And so I think there would have been some ADs in this conference, I mean, Bruce Pearl's coaching in the SEC, right? They said, who cares about baggage? I don't know that Mitch Barnhart is that guy. I think he wants someone coming in here, probably a little bit younger than Bruce Pearl, which doesn't match my line of thinking. I mean, Bruce Pearl could do this for another 10 years, easy.
Well, on top of that, it's like everyone's acting like Pope's young. He's 51. I mean, it's not like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you're not, you didn't go get whatever, Todd Golden.
Right. Right, but I do think just what I know about Barnhart, he strikes me as a guy who wanted someone with zero baggage, even though I think we all can look at Bruce Pearl and it's like, well, what did they actually pin on the guy? They pinned an illicit barbecue and lying to the NCAA on him. And, yeah, we can talk about his assistant coaches at Auburn and that whole thing, but that, I mean, Bruce Pearl, he was able to slip past that one.
Imagine
that. I mean,
they
weren't able to pin that on him. Yeah. And so, like, what were they able to actually pin on him? A barbecue.
Never make the same mistake twice, Blake.
Yeah. Find a fall guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, that's a nothing burger. But I think for Mitch Barnhart, that is something. And maybe that's not it. Maybe he didn't want Bruce Pearl. But I do think he strikes me as an AD. What I know about him, like I said, he's probably one of the more straight shooter, played a little bit conservative, played a little bit more traditional ADs in the conference, and that would probably lead him in a path away from Bruce Pearl.
All right, wanted to switch course to college football real quick while we have you, Blake, because now the college basketball season's over. Now that this Kentucky hire's made, the gravitron's going to slow down, especially, you know, like
Mark, we've got Ole Miss's SEC spring game games.
Yes.
We got 7-on-7 hot dog eating contest.
Yes, you got the Grove Bowl?
Well, it's what it used to be. I don't know. Yeah. That's
something.
Like, I do tip my cap to Lane. Like, at least he's acknowledging, like, we're not doing anything.
But we're obviously fast approaching spring football game season. And ESPN came out with this interesting feature, 30 coaches who will define the next decade of college football. And one of the 30 was Ryan Silverfield from Memphis, as one of the kind of the young up-and-coming group of 5 head coaches, given what Memphis can do this year.
Thought leader.
He had, obviously, Kirby Smart number 1. And what was just striking, and obviously we knew it, but now just seeing it listed out, it's jarring with the people who have left college football. You know, with Saban gone, he had number 2, Kalen DeBoer, number 3, Sarkisian, 4, Ryan Day, 5, Lane Kiffin, 6, Luke Fickell. Interestingly enough, doesn't have Brian Kelly, I'm assuming because he's older, and this is the next decade. But it just got me thinking. obviously Kirby's number one. Who's got the best shot? And then he had Mike Norvell and Dan Lanning on there as well, 7 and 8. Who's the most likely to really challenge Georgia and Kirby Smart now that Jim Harbaugh's gone, now that Nick Saban's gone? Who'd you put your money on as like the next program to kind of rise up and go mano a mano with Georgia? You know, I don't know. You can throw Clemson in there too, and Dabo Sweeney, even though he's not listed.
I would say LSU and Brian Kelly. I get that that's probably a different lens than what this article was written through. But if we're just looking at it, like, who's the program that in the next 5 years or 10 years or whatever that, you know, kind of what we're talking about here can go toe to toe with Georgia. I do think LSU would be at or near the top of my list. I think Brian Kelly. Much like everybody, I think Brian Kelly's a very, very good coach. We know the one thing missing off his resume is a national championship. But I don't look at these two back-to-back 10-win seasons from them and think that he's peaked. Now, I don't know that he's going to hit his peak this year, but it was a bit of a pedestrian start for him recruiting at LSU. I mean, they were still really good classes because LSU's always going to get really good classes. But you look at what he's got lined up for 2025, it's still early days, and so the class rankings don't mean that much, but they're ranked number 3 in the recruiting rankings. But more importantly, he's got 3 5 stars in that class, including the nation's number 1 ranked quarterback prospect is committed to LSU. So I really think LSU could be a monster. I mean, that's been no secret in college football for the longest time, and I keep coming back to, like, if Les Miles and Ed Orgeron can win national championships there, I think that Brian Kelly is a better coach than either of those guys. So I would look to them. I would also look to Texas. Texas is, again, sleeping giant, whatever you want to call it, monster resources.